compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show, where we have an echo again. Cyrus, we need to get rid of this echo, please. But the show must go on. Hey, welcome back. Patrick Madrid here. Once again, a little gremlin activity. Sorry about that. These things do happen in live radio, but I am back and everything is about back in action. The number to dial is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Cyrus, I have a serious question for you. You love my serious questions, don't you?
It's my favorite part of the day.
I thought it would be. So here's my serious question. Have you ever gone to your ATM to withdraw, you know, 20, 40 bucks, only to find about $1 billion in your checking account?
Oh, I wouldn't be here talking to you if that had happened to me.
Where would you be?
I would be on some tropical island somewhere.
Oh, thanks a lot. Let's hope you never get $1 billion.
Yeah, waiting for the feds to come and find me.
Well, check this out. So you not even once in your life have ever had like an extra $1 billion you didn't know was there?
No, no matter how many times I've wished it.
Yeah.
Not once.
Well, imagine that you're this lady. She's a Florida woman. She reportedly wanted to withdraw $20 from an ATM, and she discovered that her account balance showed about $1 billion. And here's the exact amount. $999,985,855.94. So we'll just round it up to $1 billion, shall we? That was what her Chase bank balance showed. She told the outlet that she wanted to return the massive amount because she could not get a real person to talk to her at her bank. She says, "Oh my gosh, I was horrified. I know most people would think that they won the lottery, but I was horrified." I could imagine her feeling that way. Julia Yonkowski is her name. She says, "When I put in for the $20, the machine came back and said, 'We'll give you the 20, but that'll cause an overdraft and you'll be charged.' And I said, 'Oh, just forget it.'" She said, adding that she hasn't touched her account since. But Chase,
poor lady.
Well, I have $1 billion in there. Why would there be an overdraft?
Yeah, good Colleen, question.
Can you imagine having $1 billion and you need to go to an ATM to get a $20 bill? Because you're heading to the dollar store?
Problems, I'd be happy to have that problem.
Yeah, you could buy a dollar store.
I could buy an ATM.
You could buy $100 stores and just put one everywhere you want to go. A Chase spokeswoman clarified that what Yankowski thought was a balance was actually a negative in that amount. So here's my next question, Cyrus. My next serious question for you. Have you ever found that you were $1 billion short in your checking account?
Every day. Every single day.
It might as well be $1 billion, right?
Right.
I know that feeling. Boy, the days when Nancy and I were young marrieds and there was always too much month left at the end of the money.
Oh, yeah.
I know that feeling.
Yeah, me too.
Thankfully, it's in the distant past, but boy, do I remember it.
Those are happy days, though. When I look back at, you know, when we were struggling our most, those are some of the happiest moments of my whole life.
I concur. We have a similar experience. We didn't have anything. We did. I had a car payment and a house payment, and I had a passel of kids.
Yeah.
And a little bitty house. You know, our house, Cyrus, when we finally moved out of it, the first house we ever bought, when we moved into it, we had two toddlers and a newborn. And we moved into a house that we could afford. It was 1,165 square feet, the size of some wealthy people's walk-in closets. And when we moved from that house 9 years later, we had seven children.
Wow.
Yeah. And mom and dad. And man, was that a tight squeeze. But you're right. It was a lot of fun. It was very simple. We ate very simple food. You guys probably did too, because we couldn't afford, yeah. You know. And we rarely ever had steak or anything like that.
Yeah. Going out to eat was a laughable, you know, it's not even an option. Like,
oh, let me tell you a story about that, as long as we're on the topic. And this is not filler, by the way. This is hopefully encouragement for young families that are finding it difficult to make ends meet. We know what that's like. So there was this Mexican restaurant called Guadalajara. It was near where we lived. And they had one day we drove by and they had this big banner out in the front that said, "Kids eat free on Tuesdays." So Nancy and I look at each other like, I know where we're going on Tuesday. So we go to Guadalajara's that evening, and it's us and seven kids. And so we get seated and we order. And so I said to the waitresses, said, so it's Tuesday and our kids eat free. And she said, oh, no. It's one kid per adult. So like two of your kids can eat free because there's you and your wife, but the other five don't get to eat free. And I said, but that's not what your sign says. She said, I know, but that's what the policy is. But I said, honestly, ma'am, that's not what the sign says. The sign says kids eat free. And we came here because your advertisement says kids eat free. Now, I'm not normally that kind of guy, but I also had seven kids to feed, and I wanted the free meal. So the manager came over, and a similar conversation ensued. And he, you know, I think he saw the light, and he says, you know what? You're right. That banner is inaccurate. So we'll honor it tonight, but henceforth, one kid per adult, everyone else has to pay.
The Madrid rule.
So I pushed it. I tested it, but we did feed the seven kids for free that night. And we continue going back to that restaurant.
Okay, so they didn't go out of business.
That's not good. On our account.
That is good to know.
If we had kept coming there every Tuesday, we might have put them out of business and had more kids. So, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. When you were young and penniless and everything is simple, life is good in many respects, isn't it?
Yeah, it makes you appreciate the small things.
Like not having $1 billion in your checking account.
Full circle. Nicely done.
Yeah. So as you can imagine, Chase, they did what banks do, and they fixed that problem. So she doesn't have that money. But she's also not short that money either, which is good. 888-914-9149. Speaking of shortages, just real quick before we go to the phones, there's a chip manufacturer in Taiwan. Apparently, it's like the one of its kind, only chip maker, that makes certain silicon chips that are necessary for just about everything. And one of the alarms that is being sounded, in this case in the Wall Street Journal, is that given the current tensions with China and how China seems to be flexing in what looks like a preparation to invade Taiwan, would mean that the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company would be out of reach for the United States and the rest of the world if China should do that. The company makes almost all of the world's most sophisticated chips and many of the simpler ones too. And Cyrus, we're not talking about potato chips or corn chips. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the kind that go into your computer.
Ah, there.
Yeah. Could you imagine if like all the potato chips and corn chips in the world were controlled by China? You can't. I can see it on your face. You can't even fathom it.
Trying to think of a smart aleck remark, and yeah. I'm coming up short.
Keep thinking. They're in billions of products with built-in electronics, including iPhones, personal computers, and cars, all without any obvious sign that they came from Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, or TSMC, which does the manufacturing for better-known companies that design them, like Apple and Qualcomm, etc. TSMC has emerged over the past several years as the world's most important semiconductor company with enormous influence over the global economy, with a market cap of around $550 billion. That's about 550 times more than that lady thought she had in her bank account that one day. It ranks as the world's 11th most valuable company. Its dominance leaves the world in a vulnerable position, however. As more technologies require chips of mind-boggling complexity, more are coming from this one company on an island that is the focal point of tensions between the U.S. and China. And China, of course, claims Taiwan for its own. Analysts say it will be difficult for other manufacturers to catch up in an industry that requires hefty capital investments. The TSMC can't make enough chips to satisfy everyone, a fact that has become even clearer amid a global shortage, adding to the chaos of supply bottlenecks, higher prices for consumers, furloughed workers, especially in the auto industry. They say that this situation is similar in some ways to the world's past reliance on Middle Eastern oil, with any instability on the island threatening to echo across industries. Companies in Taiwan, including smaller makers, generated about 65% of global revenues for outsourced chip manufacturing during the first quarter of this year. So that, I think it's good that they're raising this hue and cry, and maybe Jeff Bezos will buy Taiwan. You know, just buy it. Write a check and buy that place, and then you know, move the manufacturing to some other place. I don't know what the solution is to that, but wouldn't that be a terrible thing if we wound up not being able to make computers because China controlled the place where computers are made. 888-914-9149 is the number. Why don't we do some phone calls, starting with Caroline in Florida. Good morning, Caroline. Welcome.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. I have a situation where my husband has been accused of molesting a child.
Oh, no.
I don't know how to handle it. He's denied it to me. I've gone around and around. I moved out of the house. I'm with my son.
Whose child is this in question? One of your children?
It's my granddaughter.
All right.
My granddaughter. And one of the times it took place, I mean, the three of us were sitting right next to each other. Mm-hmm. And she mentioned that she told me something, and I didn't hear it. And she told me again, and she was very graphic. And I said, well, what did Grandma do? She said, you just hit him and said, stop it. Now, if she was that graphic at that moment, I would have done more than hit him on the shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't understand. We were just so close to one another. I mean...
Do you mean that she was remembering? Sorry to interrupt you, Caroline. Do you mean that the little girl was remembering this incident in a way different from how you remembered it, and you didn't remember her saying that or something like that?
I lost you. I'm sorry. I lost you.
No, it's okay. What I'm asking is, are you saying that your granddaughter, that she was telling you the way this happened, and she remembered it differently from how you remember it? Is that what you mean?
I don't remember it. I don't remember it.
She
said she told me. I don't remember her telling me.
I see.
She had told me what she told me a week later, that, I mean, it would have been taken care of right then and there, because what she told me was very, and she's always very, when we're together, like the three, you know, he would be teasing her or something right in the same room. And she'd go, Grandma, you know, she'd come over to me. And he'd say, oh, go to your grandmother. And then she would, and I would say, oh, I would hug her. And I said, well, you're my baby. And she would laugh. And he would say, well, you really love your grandmother, don't you? So it's not like she doesn't come to me. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
And for everything to be that graphic, I'm sitting right next to her. Next to her, not even a foot away from her.
There is a phenomenon. I don't know if this applies in this case. There is a phenomenon that has been proven that some people have false memories, and they can have a false memory implanted in their mind by power of suggestion or in some other ways. So I don't know if this might be something like that. I can easily imagine how you, as the grandmother, you know that if she were to have said something like that to you, you would have gone through the roof. You would have reacted. And
oh my God! Right then and there, no doubt.
Right.
And she said it happened again upstairs, and but when I came downstairs, he was sleeping on the couch.
Well, these are waters that I don't have the competence to get into by way of counseling or things. And this is also a legal matter, first of all, more than anything else, perhaps a criminal matter. So I don't want to tread on the situation, because I don't know what to say to you other than this, and that is, let's assume good faith on her part. Let's assume good faith on the part of the child, and treat this with all seriousness and all due respect for her, assuming that what she's saying is correct, even though it just doesn't fit with your memory and you were there, etc. Those are all things that you would need to bring forward in any kind of investigation that would take place. So are you taking care of her, or are her parents there to take care of her? Because it sounds
Her parents. We were visiting. We were visiting there.
I see.
And then when she mentioned something else to me, and I can't get graphic, and she said, well, other people do it. It didn't dawn on me to ask her then, because I'm trying to assimilate everything she's telling me. It didn't dawn on me what she said until the next day to ask her, what do you mean other people?
Mm-hmm. And what did she
so,
say?
I don't know. She just shrugged her shoulders.
Well, among the things I would want to know if I were doing this investigation would be, has she been exposed to pornography? Is there pornography on her parents' phones or computers? I mean, I hate to suggest such a thing. Obviously, you don't want to think that about your own children. But that would be one. I mean, maybe it was a friend. She was at a friend's house or something. And it's possible that she saw something that caused these ideas in her mind. But it's also possible that she's being entirely truthful. That's a real possibility. I don't want to in any way discount that.
And that's, I know. I understand that. But a lot of things just don't. They're not coming together.
Well, one thing is for sure.
My daughter.
One thing is for sure, Carolyn. I'm not equipped to give you advice, legal or otherwise. So I'll have to leave it at this. One thing is for sure. You were a witness in the room, sitting right next to her and your husband, at one of these alleged events. So that's a very important part of this issue. So if there is a police investigation, it sounds like there will be. If there already isn't one. That's the kind of information that you would honestly supply. You'd say, I was there. This did not happen. I was there. She did not say anything to me or anyone else. And had she said something, I would have immediately reacted to it. That's the kind of corroborating information that can help if your husband is innocent. And God forbid that an innocent man would be accused of something so horrible. But it does happen from time to time. I think far more often the accusations are genuine. But in this case, I just don't know. So I'm going to leave it at that. I don't know what else I can suggest to you. There should be a thorough investigation, and your being a witness to that, I think, is going to be crucial in helping sort out what actually did happen. I wish you all the best in this situation. I can't imagine how terrible it must be for all of you. But if you haven't talked to the police yet, be sure that you do that. And see where this goes. You have my prayers, Caroline. I promise you that. Thank you. I think we should take a break. And we'll have a short little segment after this. But we'll be right back with more of your phone calls on The Patrick Madrid Show. The number is 888-914-9149.
Welcome back to The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149.
Got it.
That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
You like it?
You got it.
You got the Patrick Madrid Show for the next 2.5 hours. If you'd like to be on the program, give me a call at 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Off to Jacksonville, Florida, we shall go and talk to Mark. Hi, Mark. Welcome.
Patrick, how you doing?
I am well, sir. Thank you.
Can you hear me on speaker?
I certainly can, but I'd prefer you not be on speaker if possible.
Okay, I'm going to try to get off of it.
Thanks.
All right. Let's see. There we go. High tech.
There we go.
All right. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you. So what would you like to talk about?
So I was in a meeting on Monday night. And we were a bunch of solar and roofing guys. And this group of folks come in, and it's a bunch of Christians, and these guys are going on a missionary trip. Mm-hmm. And they were asking for donations. And of all places, they're going to bring Jesus to Poland. And I was like, what? That's the most Catholic country there is on the planet. And they showed an empty church. And my wife was there, and I talked about it yesterday with her. You know, she was glad that I didn't jump up. And I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, these missionaries are going to Poland to bring Jesus, and when it's all over, they're going to end up being Catholicized. And I wanted to say, didn't you ever hear of Father Jersey? You know, where there were tens of thousands of people standing outside the church. So my question to you is, what is the status of the church in Poland?
I couldn't begin to tell you. When you say, what is the status, do you mean like, are the churches empty, or is the church thriving there? Is that what you mean?
Is the church empty? I mean, in Spain and France, we know churches are empty, and in Italy. But I thought Poland was like, you know, the churches were still full, the faith was strong, that sort of stuff.
Yeah. what was that?
Poland don't know Jesus, mm-hmm. that they're, you know, and they talked about the traditional church and this and that. And the guys that I'm involved with, the upper echelon of this company, are missionaries from South America. And they asked me to go to South America later on to build churches. And I thought, by the time we go, I'm going to be, you know, I'm working on them becoming Catholic.
Well, that's a good way to look at it. Let's start there. I mean, it's a good way to see this as a glass half full moment rather than a glass half empty. So the reality is these are Protestant folk. They think they're, quote unquote, bringing Jesus to the poor, benighted Catholics of Poland. Rather than Father Jerzy Popieluszko, I would have mentioned Pope John Paul II. Ever heard of him, guys? St. John Paul II, that guy from Poland? The guy who helped Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan bring down the Soviet Empire? They've had Jesus in Poland for about 1,500 years, maybe a little bit less than that. And they know Jesus better than you guys do because they, as Catholics, belong to the original Christianity. Not to some, you know, sect that came long, long after that with some ideas that are incorrect. So if it were me, I might have been a little more pugnacious and have said that, you know, you guys don't understand. You're going to a place that has known Jesus for so many centuries. Maybe you should do a little study of the Catholic faith before you decide to go there and presume to tell those people about Jesus. But I don't think that would have worked very well. So I like your idea. To work on them and to show them the truth of the faith. I think that's admirable of you to do that. But as to your question, what is the status of the church? I mean, a simple Google search probably would bring up the details. I don't know off the top of my head. My impression is the same as yours. I've traveled widely in Europe for many years, and you're right. The churches in Spain are virtually empty. The same is true in other places, maybe less so in Italy. But the church is alive, it's just not thriving in those Western European countries. Now, I don't know what the circumstances are in Poland, but I suspect it's a lot better there than it is in some of the more decadent, secularized Western European countries. But either way, regardless of what the situation is of the church in Poland, Mark, your plan of action sounds like the right one in any case. Whether the churches are empty or full, you have a mission field in your doorstep with these guys, and you can evangelize them.
So. Yeah, I walk around with a picture of Divine Mercy in my top pocket, mm-hmm. and I'm a fourth degree knight, so I wear the hat with the Holy Spirit on top of it. I tell them I'm with HSS, Holy Spirit Security. And I'm on my way to prison right this moment. I'm going to prison this morning. I do
what
prison
are you doing
ministry.
In prison? Ha-ha.
I do prison ministry. I do Catholic Hour.
I get it, but the way you said it, I knew what you were up to. But yeah,
exactly.
I see
well, I
doing.
Say that all
yeah.
the time because it's a tool for evangelization. And yeah. I say, oh, my goodness, what are you going for? And I say, I'm going for an hour. And then I tell them I'm with HSS, and then we start talking about this and that and the other thing. So it's just a tool. But I do walk around, and I get in kitchen tables and stuff like that talking to people about a roof or solar. And they go, mm-hmm. is that Jesus in your pocket? And I say, oh, my goodness. And I got a Matthew Kelly book in my bag. I say, here, how about one of these? Mm-hmm. You know, Rediscover the Catholicism. Or a lot of people tell me they're Catholic. And it's like, oh, great, where do you go? I say, well, we don't go. And then I say, oh, my goodness, did you hear that? And I'm going, it's Jesus. He's calling you. Come back to church. And then we talk about Jesus for a little while, and I leave. And they go, what about my roof? I said, if you want a roof, call me tomorrow. I came here to tell you about Jesus. So I'm a little crazy.
You're crazy, but, crazy like a fox, right? Well,
yeah, my mother named me Mark for a reason.
Do me a favor, Mark. Call me back in a month or so after you've had a chance to really work on these guys and let me know how that works out. I'd like to know.
Well, this plan is not like McDonald's. This is going to take a long while. I've been with these guys for a couple of years, and I know them, and I'm blocked out. My calendar's blocked out for Mass on Mondays and Fridays, and I talk to them about First Fridays and stuff. And, you know, one of them told me how great Martin Luther was, that, you know, how he saved the church and all this other stuff. I am not Google-friendly. So I don't have the ability to just go out there and find stuff. I tried. I went to Catholic Answers and tried to find those answers.
I can show you how to do it, Mark. It's super simple. Even your kids can do it. You just go to google.com, and in the search bar you type status of the Catholic Church in Poland. Boom. And you're going to get all kinds of information. You can sort through it. And I'm sure there will be information there that speaks to this issue. Well, if you can't call me in a month, call me in 10 years and let me know how things go with these guys. But I do wish you well. I think you're doing the right thing. And I like your approach to this, seeing it as an opportunity for evangelization as opposed to something to be afraid of. I agree with you. Thank you. Let's go now to Anthony in Florida. Good morning, Anthony.
Hi, Patrick.
Hello.
I have a question Fatima, one particular thing that was said by Mary at Fatima, and how it might apply to me and I guess my family and you know my way of thinking.
What is it?
At Fatima, Mary told the children when they were asking about people and who had gone to heaven, who they knew. They asked about this girl Amelia and. Mary told them that she would be in purgatory till the end of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I want to know what that means. When I think about my own grandparents and offering masses or any of my relatives and offering masses for them,
mm-hmm.
My understanding was that, I was doing them some good and at least in, offering maybe 30 masses that, something
to
that
help the souls in purgatory, right?
Yes, souls in purgatory. Right. Yeah.
Well, let me offer a perspective on that issue. I'm familiar with what you're referring to when they asked, if different people had gone to heaven. And Our Lady said that young girl, Amelia, will be in purgatory until the end of the world. She did say that. I mean, they reported that she had said that, but there's a way to understand that would be less fearful, and that would be that without the prayers of people like you, meaning the children, without your prayers, rosaries, masses, etc., she will be in purgatory until the end of the world. So the implication would be that your prayers, your mass intentions, your holy communions, your sufferings, all of those things, that those are beneficial to the souls in purgatory, and it may well be that she would have left purgatory much sooner, maybe very quickly, given all the prayers that are likely to have been given for that girl. That's the way I've always understood that it wasn't a kind of, hopeless, she was stranded no matter what happened. She was always going to be in purgatory until the end of the world. I never really read it in that light. I could see how one would. But I always understood it to mean that unless you pray for her, that's where she's going to be.
Ah, okay. It's a conditional. Yeah, very good.
That's my impression. Okay. I mean,
yeah.
Maybe when I get to purgatory, I'll meet Amelia and she'll say, you misunderstood. No, I don't know. I really don't know. But I think that positive way of interpreting it is more in keeping with Our Lady's emphasis on prayers and how prayers help people, not to mention the mercy that Jesus talks about to St. Faustina, and so when we implore mercy for the souls in purgatory, God is ready to give it. What does the Bible say? He doesn't delight in the death of a sinner. He wants everyone to be happy, and he provides the means for that. Some people refuse it, but he's not going to say, nope, sorry, she's there until the end of time. I don't believe he would say that. I think prayer changes things.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's very encouraging. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, that's personally, I think that way of understanding that is more in keeping with everything else we know about God's love and mercy. Doesn't mean he's not all just. He is all just. Some people forget that. And you'll see people say silly things like, well, the God that I worship would never send anybody. Well, then you don't worship the God of the Bible then, because the God of the Bible is all merciful, yes, but he's also all just. So we can't forget that. But I sure like a whole lot of mercy, personally.
Yeah, I'll take that.
All right. Thanks, Anthony. Good to talk to you. Let's see. 888-914-9149. We'll go now to Dubuque and speak to Barbara. Good morning, Barbara. Hello.
Oh, good morning. I enjoy your radio program immensely. I do have a question.
Thank you.
Reflecting on Mary, our Blessed Virgin Mother, at the wedding of Cana And she went to Jesus and said, well, you know, we're in a spot here. We don't have any wine left. Well, being a mother myself and knowing my children, at that point I was reflecting and I thought, does she know who Jesus really is at that particular time? Because you wouldn't go up to your son and say, hey, there's no wine left, do something. And so she had to know who Jesus was at that point. My second question is, when I'm looking at the birth of Mary, of Jesus, I see in the picture with Mary and a midwife. So I thought, well, that makes sense because every village must have had a midwife. And Jesus had to experience everything that a human experienced, so he had to experience the real birth. And that's my question. Is there any information on, as to whether there was a midwife or Jesus had a normal birth? Those are my two things.
Okay, very good. So the first one, the wedding at Cana, we'll take them in order. So the wedding at Cana, did Mary know who Jesus was? And the reason that's a fair question is because of Jesus' reaction to her when she says, son, they have no more wine. So you know how the story unfolds. She sees that the wedding party had run out of wine. It must have been quite a party because normally these parties would go on for days. So she sees that there's no more wine there, and she says to Jesus, she said, they have no wine. That's all. That's all she said. Now, Jesus' reaction to her in verse 4 is, it could be, if we don't see a little more clearly into what's going on here, it could be a little puzzling because he says, O woman, what have you to do with me? My hour has not yet come. And then in verse 5, Mary says to the servants, do whatever he tells you. And then, of course, he performs this miracle. And interestingly, he performs this miracle at her intercession. So she's interceding with Jesus on behalf of the wedding party. It's unknown whether or not they asked her. They might have asked her. They might have come up to her and said, you know, we're in a real predicament here. We don't have any more wine. And we know that your son is very wise. They didn't know that he performed miracles yet. We know he's very wise. Maybe you can talk to him and see what he would recommend for us. So his answer to her, O woman, what have you to do with me? In some translations, it's, what does this have to do with you and me, is another way that it's sometimes translated. But it's a query. He's interrogating her, and I don't mean that in a, you know, like a rough way, but he's asking her this question, you know, why are you asking me this? My hour has not yet come. We can presume from that he meant that his original plan to start his public ministry would have been commenced at some later point. But he does what she asks him then and there. So he speeds up the timetable because his mother asked him to do this, and he performs the miracle. So did she know who he was? I think the answer is yes, she did, because in Luke chapter 4, when the angel Gabriel greeted her, he said in verse 42, blessed are you among women, and blessed is the fruit of your womb. And why is this granted to me that the mother of my Lord should come to me? This is what Elizabeth said to her. So Elizabeth recognized that Mary was carrying Jesus, and there was something special about him. And if we go back to the angel Gabriel speaking about her, he tells her exactly who this is. He says, the Holy Spirit will come upon you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. Therefore, the child to be born will be called Holy, the Son of God. So she had at least that information given to her. And I think most of the church fathers who comment on this and the theologians and doctors of the church, their position, as I read it, is that Mary had infused knowledge from very early in her life, and God revealed many things to her very clearly that she knew, but as we're also told, that she pondered these things in her heart. So she wasn't given to talking a lot about these things. She pondered them. She knew them and wondered about them, and gradually God's plan began to unfold and she would understand it more clearly. So I think that's the best way to answer that question. She did know who Jesus was, but I think it was a gradual unveiling for her of exactly how his identity as the Son of God, the Holy One, etc., would play out. So as to the second question about, you're going to have to remind me, the second question had to do with the midwife. That's right. So there's nothing in Scripture that tells us anything about a midwife. We can assume maybe that that might have been the case, that there was a woman there to help, but we don't know. So we can't press too hard on that. We can, I think, leave room for it. But Jesus being born of Mary in the manger in Bethlehem was, I don't think, attended to by, based upon what I see in Scripture, it doesn't seem to have been attended to by anyone other than the shepherds. I wonder if there had been a midwife, if she, or at least her presence might have been mentioned. Now, depicted in art is one thing, but that's just a depiction from the artist's mind. But I think if we go straight by what Scripture says and what the church apostolic tradition says, there's no mention of a midwife. So I think we could safely assume there probably wasn't one, but it still leaves room open that there could have been one.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that's helpful, Barbara. I always love pondering these deep mysteries like this. And won't it be interesting when we get to heaven and we find out some of these details? Thank you. Let's go now to Pat in Philadelphia. Hello, Pat.
Hi, how are you?
I am well, thank you.
Okay.
I can hear you.
I'm a little nervous because I'm calling the first time, so bear with me.
No problem.
The other day, my son, he called me and he went to a medium. Mm-hmm. Okay, and he said he saw. I mean, the medium said that he saw the his baby that was born 5 months in uterus welcome my husband Dan into heaven. And I was wondering, is it a sin to believe in that thing, you know, the medium?
Yes, it is definitely a sin. So that is dabbling in the occult, and the church forbids that. Maybe your son never knew that. Fair enough. But it would be incumbent upon you to tell him that and point out to him that the church has always forbidden any kind of trafficking with mediums, seances, tarot cards, things of that nature. We're forbidden to even, you know, we're forbidden from doing those things. So that's something he should bring up in confession the next time he goes.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And as long as we're on the topic, I will read for everybody's edification what the Catechism says about this issue. So it's Catechism paragraph 2116. All forms of divination are to be rejected. Recourse to Satan or demons, conjuring up the dead, or other practices falsely supposed to unveil the future, consulting horoscopes, astrology, palm reading, interpretation of omens and lots, the phenomena of clairvoyance, and recourse to mediums all conceal a desire for power over time, history, and in the last analysis, other human beings, as well as a wish to conciliate hidden powers. They contradict the honor, respect, and loving fear that we owe to God alone. So there you have it, and it specifically mentions mediums. Now, the next paragraph says the following. This is paragraph 2117. All practices of magic or sorcery by which one attempts to tame occult powers so as to place them at one's service and to have a supernatural power over others, even if this were for the sake of restoring their health, are gravely contrary to the virtue of religion. These practices are even more to be condemned when accompanied by the intention of harming someone. So that would include such things as hexes and casting spells, etc. Or when they have recourse to the intervention of demons. Wearing charms is also reprehensible. Spiritism often implies divination or magical practices. The church, for her part, warns the faithful against it. Recourse to so-called traditional cures does not justify either the invocation of evil powers or the exploitation of another's credulity. So, lest anyone, you know, wonder, that's the church's age-old teaching on this topic.
What about white witches? Is there such a thing?
Are you there?
Yeah. Did you hear my question?
I did. Could you hear me responding?
No, I lost you for a second. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, white witches, and, you know, if they're doing power Maybe a white witch just messed up our signal to each other.
Yeah. You know, isn't it interesting how whenever we get into a topic that touches upon the evil one,
yep,
weird things tend to happen.
That's real. Like that,
yeah,
that stuff does happen. Yeah, so what, yeah, I did not hear your answer. So,
well, when you when you asked me, I immediately flashed on the Wizard of Oz movie with Glenda the White Witch. And that, I'm sure, had a lot to do with people thinking that, oh, there's a good kind of witch and a bad kind of witch. And there really isn't. If you're practicing, not you, but if you know somebody's practicing witchcraft, it doesn't matter whether they think of themselves as a white witch, I'm just doing good things, I'm just casting spells to help people. That was also popularized, of course, with the TV series Bewitched. We have this
right.
cute, shapely young wife and mom who's really fun and nice and whatever, but she's also a witch. I mean, that I think that shaped the public's understanding of the idea of witchcraft in this direction to think, well, there must be a good kind of witch because look at her. Look at, you know, look at Bewitched. But when in fact, it's not really true. That would be all in the same category. So to answer your question, Cyrus, no. I mean, in fact, there really is no such thing as a white witch versus a black
okay.
witch or a good witch versus a bad witch. It's all of the occult.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, you had also mentioned charms.
Yeah.
So I don't want to upset anybody, but...
As you're taking the charm off.
Yeah.
I'm just joking. I know you're not wearing a charm.
But what... Can people use their rosary as a charm? Is it...
Yeah. So the word charm has a particular meaning in this context. So like a charm bracelet, a lot of women, my wife has a charm bracelet. Some of my daughters have had charm bracelets where you've got the bracelet and it's got the little, might be a heart or a key.
Yeah, half of a heart because their best friend has the other and they're BFFs forever. Yeah.
Right. So those are not charms in the sense that the catechism is referring to.
Okay.
The catechism is referring to like the evil eye. Or an amulet, or something that has been invested with the, you know, in the mind of the person. The person has invested in this thing, whatever it is, some special supernatural power or preternatural power to ward off evil spirits, to, you know, to deflect. Now, you may say, well, what about, like you brought up the rosary, what about that? What about a Saint Benedict medal? What about a crucifix? What about holy water? So this is not intended to say that God can't make use of objects, holy objects, the Bible, for example, to do these kinds of things for us, to help us think about God and the things of God. I firmly believe that the devil hates holy water, so make use of it. And I'm not suggesting that we shouldn't do that. But this is different. This is referring to something that is devoid of God. It's detached from, has no connection to the idea of a loving God, has no connection with Jesus. It's a way to try to harness, in essence, without the person necessarily realizing it, to harness the demonic spirits to help, to assist, support by using these things. Now, the fallen angels, the demons, they're all over that stuff, and they will be happy to reach out and touch someone if somebody's doing that. But in this context, the rosary is not a charm. It's not a good luck charm, nor is your miraculous medal or a scapular, that kind of thing. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. And your eyes are going to gloss over because I'm going to bring up Lord of the Rings. But there's a scene in the book where Sam gets the ring, and for a moment he thinks about all of the good things that he can do with this great power. Even though the ring's evil, he's a good person, and he knows he can do good things with it. And he has these visions of turning the earth into this beautiful garden, almost like a Garden of Eden.
Mm-hmm.
And then he rejects that, knowing that the ring is evil and nothing good can come out of it. And so that's just a great example of Tolkien.
Interesting.
I
play along with you that I'm bored with it, but I recognize it is a towering work of art, you know, that work, and I understand why people really like it, even revere it, and for the reason you just mentioned, because he weaves such powerful and vivid Christian themes into that story, right?
Throughout the entire 800 pages, yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, it's interesting that we had a chance to talk about this. It's not a topic that comes up very often. Cyrus, I don't know about you, but I have been in a situation here or there where, like, somebody would say, you know, weird things are happening in my house. I remember one lady telling me that just all kinds of strange things were popping up in her house, like little piles, like little pyramid-shaped piles of dirt and pebbles. They would be in odd places. She would
go in to clean chills. Her. All over.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. This is weird. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, but so she was asking for my advice. It was at a seminar that I had done, and she took me aside to ask me for what I would suggest. So I said, well, tell me what's going on. She said, well, take my teenage daughter. I go in to clean her room, and in the last couple of months, I've noticed these little pyramid-shaped piles of tiny little stones or tiny little grains of sand. You know, they form this pyramid, and then as soon as I touch it, it just falls apart. You know, how did it keep that shape? I don't know. Or little odd configurations of little pieces of twigs and things like that. She'd find them in her daughter's bed. She'd find them on the windowsill. She'd find them in the closet. And you know, I'm thinking, could it be ants? Could it be some sort of a pest that gets in there, and that's part of what it does? But she said, no, it was too well-shaped in too many odd locations. So I said, well, does your daughter like play with tarot cards, or does she you know, like have Ouija boards? And she said, oh, well, yeah, I mean, she has, like, her friends will come over and they'll go in the bedroom and they'll do the Ouija board, or they'll do some of these other things. And I said, I think that's where the problem is, because you now have in your home these occult artifacts, and you know, if you ring the devil's doorbell, he's going to answer the door, and that's a form of doing that. And so I don't really know what happened, but I suggested to her that she'd get rid of all of those things and have the home blessed, have the parish priest come and bless the home. And I hope that she did that. But like you, Cyrus, I felt it was eerie when she was telling me these little odd happenings.
Yeah, evil has enough sneaky ways to you know, slither into our lives. We don't need to invite it in.
Oh, gosh.
So keep it locked
far
out.
From it.
Yeah, it's yeah. likely to find windows and cracks. So mm-hmm. yep. don't open the door
it does,
to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know how a lot of people did open the door to this? I'm sorry to say, but this actually did come into the homes of many, many families around the country. That was when those vampire movies became so popular. Twilight and the associated movies like that. It glamorized and mainstreamed this idea of kind of being fascinated with and even falling in love with something that's evil. And that storyline, I think, was very dangerous because it numbed the senses and it brought down the defenses of many people who might otherwise have not been willing to consider that. And it made them think, because of the, you know, the handsome vampire kid and the beautiful girl who falls in love with the vampire kid. And I never saw them, but I knew about them, and I knew that this was the general story theme. Well, I think that culturally had a lot to do with breaking down people's natural barriers against the occult. There's a kind of, like, you had this reaction. You felt goosebumps. People naturally feel weird when some of those things come up, but when it's mainstreamed and normalized and glamorized, a lot of those defenses come down.
And we're seeing that all over.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you might be onto something.
Well, you know, what can I tell you? I'm not a genius, but I do read, and I do like to see what's going on in the world. And that was one of the things that I thought had an effect, a negative effect on many people. There are others, but we can leave it at that. I know we have a break coming, and we also have full phone lines. I want to get to the phones here shortly. Thank you for your patience, those of you who are waiting. If you call and get a busy signal, just hit redial. The number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. One of the things I want to touch upon when we come back is how some scientists are saying that things like black holes, I'm talking about, you know, these massive or supermassive light eating, it eats anything in its path, those big things in space. Some people are saying that that's actually racist. And I know that you're rolling your eyes and you're saying that's ridiculous. And I agree with you, it is ridiculous. But I want to share with you just how ridiculous it is that we've got some people in academia. I'll name two of them for you. There are others, but I'll share with you some details about how even science is racist if you look at it the wrong way. Plus your phone calls right here on the Patrick Madrid Show. The number is 888-914-9149. I'll be right back right after this.